Welcome to Shaken and Stirred. It's a James Bond rewatch podcast for diehard 00s and franchise first-timers alike. My name is Evan Atkinson, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Alex Doherty.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Very excited for today's film.
I know.
Mainly because you keep singing it, and I have no idea what it's about.
What have I been singing?
Goldfinger!
We talked about this in our last episode because I got confused, but Goldfinger is the first James Bond theme to be sung.
Right.
It is sung by Shirley Bassey, who for a while did all the Bond theme songs. Now it's like a rotating, it's a new artist every time.
Billie Eilish just won a Grammy.
Billie Eilish just did it. Sam Smith did the worst one ever. Adele did the best one ever. I'm going to name some artists right now, and I want you to tell me true or false. Did they do a James Bond theme song? All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Garbage.
No.
Wrong.
Wow. Guess I should have assumed.
Smashing Pumpkins.
No.
Correct. They did not.
Thank God.
Madonna.
Yes.
Correct.
Wow. I want to see that one. Oh, I guess I will.
Yeah, I got good news for you. Based on the title Goldfinger, Alex, what do you think this movie is about?
I think it's going to be about crazy old dude vaguely associated with Spectre who lives in mines. I think we're going to be in like Sudan maybe for this one. And it's gonna be directly tied to gold.
Okay. I like it.
And obviously there's gotta be some sort of science that is gonna try to blow up a rocket that's gonna hit the United States.
What do you think about the finger portion of the title?
I'm kind of getting like a Midas touch vibe. So I'm kind of imagining it's a dude who's like obsessed with money.
Okay.
Is like the bad guy.
I like that. We're going to find out if you're right, but spoiler alert, you're not. you said a few things that are around there. Would you be surprised if I told you Goldfinger is just a dude's last name?
Fuck. I mean, I guess I should have gotten that from the very first movie. Which is also
Dr. No. Yeah. And then Steven Russia was...
They didn't even go to Russia.
That's what I was thinking about. I was thinking about that last night after we stopped recording. And I was like, why is it called From Russia With Love?
Right?
He just writes that on a... I know this isn't the From Russia With Love episode, but some fucking notes to the editor I want to talk about really quickly is James Bond writes the title of the movie. That's the only time that we see From Russia With Love and From Russia With Love. And he writes... with love, and then goes up a level and writes From Russia.
Because he's witty. Because with love from Russia is a phrase, but then from love with Russia is a phrase.
Yeah, but what about From Russia With Love?
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Goldfinger is the movie we're watching tonight.
Right.
Very excited about it.
Indeed.
We'll tune back in after we've seen the movie and give our full review, but this time a little bit more shaken. A little bit more stirred.
Boop.
We'll see you then. Hey, say it with me.
Goldfinger!
Wow, wow, wow.
We'll get it at some point.
No.
The movie tried to remind us of how that tune went just about every 45 seconds.
Oh, for sure. But it was mainly instrumental.
We're back after having watched all hour and 50 minutes of Goldfinger.
Indeed.
And Zooey Mama off the bat. That's a great movie.
It's a lot. There were some lulls for sure.
Okay. Yes. I agree. Now that I think about it for even a second, I think the first half of the movie could have just not been there.
No, I thought the first half of the movie was so much better than the second half.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, that's the only... I was writing so much about the first in my notes. Second half. We watched a whole interlude about how we could break into a fort... We watched an interlude about how we can do some other thing.
It was
lots of interludes.
I thought that was the... Okay. Let's start with a primer. What's this movie about?
Indeed.
My first note is bird hat in all caps.
For sure, same.
So, the movie starts with James Bond with a fake bird on his head.
Seagull.
just a taxidermied seagull. Scuba diving into a location to blow up some. You know what? Now that I think about it, that cold open meant nothing to the events of the film.
I can't remember.
It just gave us the bird hat, which I loved. Also, why didn't he scuba dive under the water? Why did he need a bird hat?
I don't...
He was in a scuba suit. Ostensibly, he was underwater for most of that journey, but he also had a fake bird on his
maybe
head.
He's a really bad swimmer, so he knew he needed to make ripples, towards the top. And there was not a single gust of wind.
That's interesting. James Bond gets his next assignment. It is to figure out what this guy, Auric Goldfinger, is up to.
Miami.
He goes to Miami. Fun little pun, Auric, or A-U-R, like A-U, chemical symbol for gold.
Oh.
Yeah, James Bond is a thinking man's series.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to tail Auric Goldfinger. How does he do it? In the James Bond way. He immediately breaks into Goldfinger's hotel room and fucks his girlfriend.
No. First he fucks up her job and then also makes him lose some money. Then fucks his girlfriend.
Bond is in Miami. Felix, but a new Felix, very important to point out.
Like 15 years older. 15 and by 15, years I older. Mean 25 years yeah. older.
15 and 60s years with inflation is like 30.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's much older, way less fabulous, but still...
He just gets it, I guess.
He kind of, like, Felix is still a gay icon in a way in this film.
And he was so good to just sit back in a diner and just fucking wait.
We were iffy on Felix, but he came around by the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. We were like, we're glad he's here again.
100%.
Felix meets up with Bond in Miami. Bond is being massaged by a woman named Dink. Dink's only speaking line in the film is Felix shows up and James Bond goes, Dink, say hi to Felix. And Felix goes, well, hey, nice to meet you. And she goes, hi. And he says, say bye to Felix. And she goes, what? And he says, man talk. Slaps her on the ass. She's gone from the film.
Out of here.
Discarded. Absolutely. But she is so far... No, her and Sylvia Trench, the only two Bond girls who have not died. James Bond, after he fucks Auric Goldfinger's girlfriend, gets karate chopped so hard he falls asleep and wakes up. And Jill Masterson, the woman he was sleeping with, is on the bed covered in gold paint. And she has died.
Like, really horrifically. It's like some, like... Criminal Mind type
shit. She died from skin suffocation.
Yeah.
Which he seems to be way too familiar with.
Like, if he poked holes in the right way, she would have been able to... Like,
she just should have left a little bit of a back unpainted. She would have survived. I've seen it all the time. When?
He's a global man.
What circles do you travel in that you see women die of skin asphyxiation?
The gold ones.
I guess. So he gets obsessed with Auric Goldfinger. Follows him to Geneva. They have a bit of a tete-a-tete. Finds out that Auric is obsessed with gold. Great last name to have for someone who just also happens to be obsessed with gold. He, you know, think about that. Bond finds out that he is coming up with something called Operation Grand Slam.
Creative.
And so he tries to stop him. Along the way, he meets Tilly Masterson, who's Jill Masterson's sister, who just happens to also be in Switzerland.
She first tries to run her down with his car.
Yeah, as all gentlemen
and
do.
Then he was like, no, I shouldn't fuck. I was reprimanded. She tries to shoot him, and he's like, nice.
At one point, that is interesting to call out. He is ready to... destroy her car so that he can have relations with her.
Uh-huh.
And then says to himself out loud, discipline, Bond. That's terrifying.
Right.
This is the movie where Bond shifts from kind of like boyish fun to just a genuine predator.
Well, I don't know if he would have run her car down. I think the running the car down happened after she tried to shoot him.
Yes. That fair game.
I feel like this one would have been because she was honking at him a bunch, road rage style. I feel like his intention was to road rage back, which still would have been weird as hell. And I agree. But I don't think he would have done the same extent of damage.
Mm. He has this intercation with Tilly Masterson, finds out she's a sister. She gets sliced in the neck by Odd Job's cool hat. I realize I haven't mentioned Odd Job yet. Odd Job is the henchman of Goldfinger. He is a short butler-esque figure with a steel-rimmed bowler cap that he can throw so hard and fast, it decapitates a marble statue. That happens during the tensest golf game of all time.
But yeah, we get a lot of golf.
If you cut out that golf scene, the movie would be way worse because that golf scene is so important.
It's honestly crucial.
But also 30 minutes shorter. It is a 30-minute scene of golf. A lot of it involves them all just looking around, looking for a lost ball, because Orrin Goldfinger sucks at golf.
Ian Fleming thinks he's the smartest man alive, and that's all.
What gives you that vibe? Right? What gives you that vibe from any of these films?
He was pulling out golf facts that should never be spoken. Well, actually, now that you've lost your ball, and then I found it on the third part of this here, now I've won the game and you've lost.
James Bond unfurls this ancient scroll and he goes, by the rules of golf laid down by our forefathers, you forfeit this game because you use the wrong type of ball.
Guy's like, fuck yes.
That was crazy. Big golf scene. James Bond finds out Operation Grand Slam is Goldfinger is going to irradiate Fort Knox. So the U.S. Ba-bum. Loses all their gold for 58 years.
He kills all of his own gangsters.
Yeah, he's used all of the American Mafia in order to secure the supplies for Operation Grand Slam. Does kill them all, which is pretty wild. Not since Rudy Giuliani have we seen someone so capable of dismantling the American Mafia. I think there's
some... And also capable of self-destruction.
Honestly, Goldfinger and Giuliani, not dissimilar looking.
No.
Both kind of schlubby, thin-haired, slimy individuals. So James Bond, of course, has to stop this plan. Along the way, he meets another one of Goldfinger's associates. What was her name again? I forgot it.
How about Pussy Galore?
Pussy Galore. So we've had Honey Rider, Sylvia Trench, you know, some pretty euphemistic names. Mm-hmm. I don't know if euphemistic is a word, but it feels right.
It should be.
Pussy Galore is so on the nose, it is Austin Powers-esque.
It's incredible.
What'd she do for a job again?
She has the Pussy Galore Flying Circus.
Are all the pilots lesbians? We don't know.
That's not confirmed, but in my wildest dreams, 100%
a flying circus.
Nothing but lesbians.
Of beautiful blonde lesbians.
It is incredible. They've got great routines, but they're also kind of murderous. Fully done to the nines.
Brandi Carlile is shaking watching this movie.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's amazing. You know, she is immune to his charms, we assume, because she is not of his sexual persuasion.
She keeps implying that for a lot of the movie.
Yeah, she says she's not down for it, and it feels like she's not down for
it
the whole time. And then he does assault her in a barn.
Yeah.
Which is tough.
Indeed. She quote-unquote gives in to it.
And then she gives into it and then defects.
Ian Fleming's a terrible man.
Oh. Yeah, dog. That's do what I gotta 30 say, seconds man. Of research on that fool. But this is shown off screen, which was weird. They have sex, and then at the end, Operation Grand Slam happens. Goldfinger's forces are invading Fort Knox. They've sprayed sleeping gas across all the army men. And then it turns out they were all just faking being asleep.
Yeah.
Which was pretty wild because I feel like they should have just not done that. But I guess
they wanted them to be self-assured.
They wanted to trap Goldfinger. But they did
like love going into traps, and they love to set traps.
But they did let Goldfinger just almost set off a nuke.
Yeah.
Is the thing. Uh-huh. I feel like they should have woken up just a hair earlier.
But maybe they wanted to get to the bomb.
Listen, I have a lot of issues with the American government, and their handling of Operation Grand Slam is number one on that list. I think... Declassify those papers. Show us what really happened, America.
Honestly.
What really happened when Orra Goldfinger...
They slept a little bit too long.
Felix wakes up, saves the day. James Bond has
some stranger saves the day.
That was wild.
I mean, he might not be a stranger. They easily could have introduced him earlier.
No, but I have no idea who that man is. I did not notice. Like, it's... At the end, James Bond is handcuffed to the bomb... And he's fighting Oddjob. He defeats Oddjob by electrocuting him. The second electrocution in the movie, by the way. And then James Bond is trying to defuse the bomb. in the most hopeless way possible. He's just looking at this bomb.
Touching it.
Not like yanking anything. Mm-mm. He's like, well, there's wires there and there's a screen there. And,
well, he just puts his hand right on top of it.
He's just like, just rubbing it. Mm-hmm. Just like, I have no fucking clue what to do.
And no thoughts, pure vibes going off for this one.
And then a complete stranger to us shows up and is like, there's an off switch on the side, my guy. Flicks that, the bomb turns off, the day is saved. James Bond's like, I was wondering when you'd get here. Camera pans up, a man we've never seen before.
No idea. He looks like everyone else, but we don't know him.
He's just a white man with a fedora.
Uh-huh.
No speaking lines for him.
Incorrect.
He's just the man who saved Fort Knox. We're not going to give him a name.
Mm-mm. It's all 007, maybe.
And then...
That's actually 008.
Then James Bond, Felix is like, hey, good job saving all the gold in America. The president wants to see you. Get on this plane so you can go meet the president. And James Bond's like, as long as there's enough alcohol to pickle my insides.
Mm-hmm. Felix is like, don't worry. Fucking got you.
Felix says, I ordered alcohol for three. And James like, who else is flying? And he said, just you, baby. And he said, well, it sounds good. I'll be on the plane. Jimmy's drinking his brew, and then Goldfinger escaped. He's on the plane. He threatens him. And then Chekhov's gun, honestly, at this point. Mm-hmm. Chekhov's depressurized airplane cabin. I wrote this down. I want a bumper sticker that says, Pussy is my co-pilot.
No, you'd be Pussy's co-pilot. I'm Pussy's co-pilot.
I'm Pussy's co-pilot. Or Goldfinger threatens James Bond with the gun. Bond had already told Pussy that if you shoot a gun in a plane, it'll depressurize the cabin and the plane will crash.
Big thoughts.
Which I have seen a Mythbusters about, and I can tell you, not true.
No way.
I mean, it'll suck to be on that plane, but like the plane won't blow up. Goldfinger, in a struggle, blows out a window. Gets sucked out a window like Augustus Gloop in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Mm-hmm.
He just gets yeeted out that plane.
Mm-hmm.
Bond then goes to the front of the plane. They crash, and then the film ends, as do, feels like most of the films, with eschewing rescue in favor of just continuing to absolutely bone down.
She waves for help. He goes, no.
Alex, what were some of your highlights and lowlights from this movie?
I'm definitely going to say highlights were the general concept of the Pussy Pilot Brigade.
Yeah.
I also feel like just the first half of the movie was very exciting. You got a lot of spy gadgets and stuff.
That's true. I didn't mention Q.
Mm-hmm.
We have a full Q lab scene. They're testing out parking meters that shoot tear gas. Seems like Q's whole bag is that he has things that release tear gas.
Yep.
Parking meters, deodorant, watches probably.
Yep.
Hey, can we talk about Q for a second?
100%.
Specifically his hands?
Oh my God.
So.
They're some chunky boys.
Q, I encourage everybody who listens to this, all six of you, to look at Q's hands. They're stuffed.
They're massive.
He has massive, like, just puffy. And I'm nervous that the actor was sick with something.
No, they were just...
It felt unnatural how thick his fingers and hands were.
They were so large.
He hands James Bond a lighter that has a tracking device in it. And to him, it looks like it's the size of a Listerine breath strip.
Mm-hmm.
A reference that we're all current on.
Yep.
And he hands it to James Bond, and James Bond might as well have picked up, like, a book.
Yep. It looks like he's holding, like, a small phone.
It is crazy. But Q in that scene does give James Bond his trademark Aston Martin DB9.
Yep.
The first Aston Martin in the franchise. I was very excited.
And that was really fun.
It.
It's got multiple plates. It's got lots of like bombs, shit that comes out the back.
Yes.
It's got
oil
stuff
slick.
That comes out the side.
Machine oil guns. Slick. Smoke screen.
I love a good car chase like that.
Love a good car chase.
I do love my boats and I love my trains.
Yeah.
But if you're going to give me cars and give me car fights, give me Fast and Furious style, which it gave me.
Oh, ejecto-cito, cuz.
100%. That was great.
The best ejector seat scene since Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yep. So that would be highlights for me. Do you want to do highlights before I hit my lowlights?
Can we say our lowlights at the same time?
Yeah.
Was it...
Well, actually, which one do you want to do first?
Was it...
I've got two.
Okay.
Well...
As with every episode, our lowlight was racism.
Yep.
It was tough. All the villains are Asian inexplicably.
Yeah, and all of the workers on a property were very much black.
And there's a pretty graphic assault of Pussy Galore.
Yeah.
That
like 100% she said no many a time.
Yeah, that was tough to watch.
They started fighting each other.
It was kind of fun. They were doing
a game.
They were doing playful back and forth judo.
And then she was like, okay, cool, see ya.
All right, and then he was like, well, hold on. We did judo. Now we have to kiss. And she was like, I just kind of want to do the judo. That was pretty rough. That
awful.
Was very rough. In my notes, I wrote, uh-oh. right after New Felix is greasy. I don't quite know what that refers to.
Like, you could just kind of see Ian Fleming's fears in these. And one of them is just the East.
Ian Fleming is terrified of gay people, of the East,
mm-hmm.
and I guess of like people with functioning livers.
Yeah, as soon as a woman betrays him, he's like, perfect, I am able to punch her in the face.
Yes,
this gives me free fucking reign.
Oh yeah, a woman betrayed Bond in the opening scene and he just threw her in the way of an assailant and she just got clobbered.
Yeah, right off the bat. So you're in for a good time.
Some of my highlights, I think there's a scene with a banker who's explaining how Auric Goldfinger has gotten all of his gold, and he wins my award for the most British man in the film because he's like, oh, do be kind. All of his gold has come from here. He's able to do it completely legally, though we haven't found out how he does it. That was deliciously British for me. I also loved the Q lab scene. That was very exciting. I loved how intense the golf scene was. I was actually pretty engaged with it, to be honest. Like, golf is kind of lame, but I don't know. I liked it. I think my favorite moment from the film, though, was James Bond is captured by Goldfinger in the middle of the movie, and he is tied to a table, and Goldfinger is like, check out this sick laser I invented. It's pointed straight at your hog.
Yep.
And that is the first time that James Bond confronts his mortality, is when his wedding vegetable is threatened. It is so fascinating to me. There's a laser slowly creeping up the table towards his junk, and he is defeated.
Absolutely.
He does not know what to do.
Shaking in his fucking boots.
He's terrified. And I thought, one, that's Sean Connery's most, like, dynamic performance that we've seen so far.
That and the gold covering.
Ooh, yeah, that's true. When Jill Masterson is covered in gold, he's pretty bummed out about it. He's
real emotional responses to a woman being injured.
Contrasted to his Bond girl from Russia with Love, when all he wanted was for her to just be gone.
Yeah,
he's like, come on, I'll leave you here. Please let me leave you.
Please.
He was bummed out when this girl he met today died. We got our first shaken, not stirred.
Yes.
In this episode, which I don't know if we've talked about this yet on the podcast, but that's just a watered down drink. Like, it is interesting. He's so adamant about it being shaken because it just means that it's less alcoholic.
Is it?
If you shake something with ice, the ice melts faster.
Weird.
Than if you stir it. So
it sounds like it's so much more intense.
If you shake a drink, there's going to be more water in it than if you stir it and then strain the ice out.
Interesting.
So he's just like, can you put some more water in it, please? My liver is collapsing.
I am a man, because he's a spy. He needs to make sure he's on his game.
Another thing that I liked is Goldfinger building an entire ranch that transforms drastically just to reveal a big map, and then transforms again to reveal a second, more detailed map.
100%. He was building all up for this moment, and then he just kills them anyways. Which is hilarious. He builds them up for nothing.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to do any of it.
There's a lot of, you know, villains explaining their plans. And this movie was interesting in the past two, the villain explains their plan to Bond. In this one, I thought it was so clever because Goldfinger has Bond on this table with the laser, and Bond's like, "Do you expect me to talk?" And he's like, "No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die," and just leaps.
Insane.
He's like, "No, dude, I'm gonna kill you right now. Mm-hmm. I'm gone." And then Bond talks his way out of it, barely.
Barely.
But I think that's badass. That's like such a cool line and such a cool scene. And then he explains his entire plan to these mobsters that he then immediately kills.
So yeah. Yeah.
He's, you know, he's still having his cake and eating it too.
Yeah, definitely. Bit. But that was very iconic.
Any other lowlights outside of the obvious? This movie was from 1964 and really bums us out.
Well, what I will say is interesting is that a good second half of the movie, I think why it also kind of lost me is he is just captured for all of it.
He captured him in Geneva.
Mm-hmm.
Then they get to Baltimore. Then they get to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Then he breaks out, gets caught again in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I see what you mean, yeah. Bond is not moving the plot forward Mm-mm. in the second half of the movie. He's just there mm-hmm. while the plot happens. And then he doesn't even save the day.
It's just
that fucking dude.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the song. This is the first movie with a sung title track by the legendary Shirley Bassey.
Ba-da-ba.
Goldfinger. It's an instant classic. Don't think about the lyrics too much because everything outside of the word Goldfinger is just Shirley Bassey going, "He loves gold. He's really horny for gold. Mm-hmm. I can't tell Midas you touch. Enough. Midas touch. He loves gold." So, I mean, it's not going to win any Grammys, although I have a suspicion it has won a Grammy.
It should, I think.
What do you think the compared vibes. To the first two we've seen?
Oh, I love it. It's something I'm going to be singing.
It's good. You were a little bummed out by the title sequence, though.
Well, I liked it in the beginning. And then
it's
we
a bunch,
find out, so it's you just see a gold woman.
It's a woman covered in gold. It's a projection, like from Russia with Love, except mm-hmm. the woman's covered in gold. And it's not just words, it's like scenes from previous movies now.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is then you end up finding out that the woman who gets covered in gold is a dead woman who dies via getting covered in gold. So then when the movie ends with a gold woman, I'm like, well, that's a
corpse.
That's a dead body, yeah.
It's tough. It recontextualizes the fun spy nature. It makes you really think that this is serious. And men are laying their lives...
Well, her sister.
On the line. I loved it. So far, favorite intro. I mean, Three Blind Mice was great, but nothing beats Shirley Bassey screaming.
No. It's powerful, the music behind it.
And then they have that motif. It comes up throughout the movie mm-hmm. whenever something, instead of the Bond theme that plays so loudly mm-hmm. at points that don't mean anything mm-hmm. in the previous movies, you just get a little... every time something cool happens. I like that. For this movie, who's your favorite character?
That's a great question, and I feel like that's definitely going to have to go to Pussy.
Yeah?
Pussy really carried it for me 100%. I feel bad that she had to go through what she went through, but she is a kick-ass pilot, has some great motivation, great fits, and here for a good time. She was my favorite.
I like that. She's great. She's great in this. My favorite... slightly less empowering character, but it was James Bond's golf caddy.
Oh, yeah.
During the golf scene. At first, I wrote down... well, I have two favorite characters, actually. First is the golf caddy, who James Bond is pulling some hijinks by swapping different golf balls and hiding golf balls during it.
Love it.
And the caddy's like, "This is the best day of my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I love your shenanigans. Sign me up. Let's prank this fucking dude. This is so fun. I love it." He was very fun. Another favorite character is in the beginning when Bond thwarts Goldfinger's gin rummy cheating operation.
Oh, yeah.
He's playing against a guy who's lost every game he's played against Goldfinger, and then today was like, "Let me double the bet," and wins big.
Yep.
And I love that day for that man. He was so excited, too. He's like, "Well, hey, it must be my day."
He's like the king of Miami.
He's the king of Miami now. He won like according to Bond, $15,000.
Yeah.
Which is
a lot.
In today's money, $1 billion.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's the price of the sun.
That was the fucking what? That's the you could buy the sun for $1 billion,
dude. FYI, that's the equivalent.
That was my favorite character. I think of the two, I'll give it to the golf caddy though.
Yeah, so definitely.
Pussy and caddy.
Best Bond moment.
Best Bond moment.
So all of your highlights fucking covered the best Bond moment.
I'm so sorry.
I will say, but I'm gonna have to give mine to. I feel like the car intro. And then first time we were driving around in the car is
the Aston
pretty,
Martin.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Is like a pretty iconic moment, and it's a very pretty vehicle.
Okay.
And I'd also like to give it to the bird hat.
I like the bird hat a lot. the bird hat cannot be understated as such a crucial moment to this film. It's our introduction to James Bond in this movie. If you had not seen From Russia with Love or Dr. No,
mm-hmm.
your introduction to Sean Connery's James Bond is a man who wears a fake bird on his head.
So which is beautiful.
Terrific. I think that's great. As a fun moment. Liquor for three for one person was pretty good on the plane.
Yeah.
I think some of the good one-liners for this, Odd Job always takes his hat off for a lady. After Odd Job does kill a woman with a hat.
Yep.
Also, Odd Job's weapon being a hat is crazy.
Gets him like too many times.
Bond's like flirtatious golf taunting was, I think, very good. But my favorite Bond moment isn't from Bond.
Ooh.
In this film. It is Moneypenny's character arc.
Yes.
Paying off.
Yes.
And Secretary Moneypenny throws a hat onto the coat rack first try perfectly. Iconic. James Bond has been entering the scene throwing his hat onto the coat rack in the past two movies. She does it and he looks shaken to his core.
Dude, emasculated.
He is absolutely castrated mm-hmm. by this woman throwing a hat onto a coat rack.
But then gives her that kiss on the cheek that is too close to the mouth. Their tension.
That's just sublime. He was kissing the corner of her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That was not COVID safe, but
as you do.
All right, Alex, what would you rate this movie out of 10?
That's a good question. And I was trying to think about this during the movie. And I'm a bit torn.
And that's the point of the podcast.
I know.
That was. I'm glad you had that in mind.
Thank you so much.
While you're thinking, do you want me to stall for you while you can think a little bit more or no?
No, I'm going to go ahead and say it, actually.
Go for it.
So I'm going to say I'm going to rate this one a solid 6.5.
6.5.
The beginning had a lot of cool spy moments, but it just didn't carry through all the way for me.
Okay.
And I don't know, the excitement wasn't quite what I needed. I didn't get the jet setting vibe. We were mainly in Miami and Kentucky.
That's so true.
That's all.
And
I
that's
got.
Yeah, as an American audience.
Mm-hmm. No thanks.
That's whatever.
Uh-huh. And I didn't like that their view of Kentucky is what it looked like.
Yeah, Kentucky seems so glamorous.
Mm-hmm.
I am gonna give this I want to give it an 8, but I'm going to give it an 8.
Do it.
This movie is fucking fantastic. I think the perfect Bond movie is Diamonds Are Forever.
Diamonds are forever.
From song to plot. But this is like the most classic James Bond movie of like, you know the song. There's a strong villain.
That's true.
This movie got an 8 for Goldfinger saying, I expect you to die. Like, that is so powerful.
That was pretty powerful.
In itself, mm-hmm. that I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I could do without a lot of this film,
mm-hmm.
but there's just something so
James Bondy.
So James Bondy about it that I love. Obviously, Q and the Aston Martin, all these things we've already said. This is a section I just want to call odds and ends. These are things that I haven't mentioned throughout the podcast mm-hmm, that I just mm-hmm. want to bring up that I just found in my notes.
Oh, definitely.
Number one, Pussy Galore passes the Bechdel test.
Yep.
She
Same
talks,
with the last film. We love that.
We love that. Honestly, these movies are about supporting women at their core.
He loves looking at blonde ladies, and it comes out in the form of Bechdel test. So it really shows that the Bechdel test is flawed.
Yes.
But we love to see it.
I also wrote down big, chunky dials. Something about the 60s and how analog everything is, they're just cranking these dials the size of dinner plates. Dude, to like
flipping tables,
flipping tables on the moving other side. Dials. I love that. I love that Odd Job smiled after everything. In every scene, whether he is decapitating a woman or he is picking up bags, he is stoked about it.
It's a gold bar right in the chest, smiling.
He loves it. And then the last thing I want to say is that this movie was brave enough to have a 360-second timer on the bomb. It's always like, you have a minute to defuse the bomb. You have 30 seconds before this blows up the planet. Here, 360 seconds. Figure, it's an arbitrary number. Figure it out.
Right.
6 minutes. It is great. It makes the ending scene kind of play out in real time. What I will say that detracted from that ending scene, no music.
No,
it is a really slow, rough, silent, shuffling fight between between James Bond yanking a coffin-sized bomb around trying to find keys on a dead body.
It looked like a Mario Party game because it was like stuck in between like small little grapes, making like a little like a pathway that he had to go, like take the specific path.
He has to yank this whole fucking thing to go get the keys. While Odd Job has to run down 8 flights of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And he has little legs. Alex, do you have any odds and ends?
1,000%.
Talk to me.
In my head, I wanted to have a little note that my ideal spinoff for this movie would involve all of the pilots in a Charlie's Angels type situation. Loved them all. I forgot to highlight before, this is my main thing. Did not note that they are all of Pussy Galore's people, including herself, are wearing velvet suits.
That's true.
She's wearing an iconic navy blue velvet suit. They're all wearing then like little jumpsuits. They've got gorgeous sun gold brooches. She's iconic and I love every bit of her.
That will do us for 1964's Goldfinger, the third James Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
Up next, we got Thunderball.
I'm so excited.
Thunderball, the most commercially successful outside of Skyfall.
I'm excited to see the one that Capitalism liked. 40
years later.
Whoa.
So, Thunderball is a big deal.
Dark. Everything after that for a while.
I know. That's going to be, that's a little bit. I'm sorry. That's a little bit of a bummer that we are going to have to deal with. Like 20 films that are not nearly as commercially successful. But
nice.
Alex, send us off. What do we say? What do we always say at the end of this? James Bond will be back in
Thunderball.
Catch you next time.